So I do little sketches, little color sketches of elves and sprites and fairies and castles and princesses, things like that, and make little notes for stories. And I hang them up to dry on the walls of my room. And the commanding officer called me in about a week later and said I was demoralizing the battalion because Navy men don't draw sprites and elves and princesses and things like that. I was forbidden to do it. So I stopped, of course, but I'd been bitten by the bug. I love the idea of stories, always have. And when I got back, I started working in office. And after a while, I had an idea for doing what I thought would be a little book on cities. And so there I was, hard at work at this thing, realizing that at that stage of my life, I didn't have either the commitment or the energy or even the sense that I wanted to do this. So in order to take my mind off it, after several months of research with 3x5 cards building up all around me, I started to do a little story just to get away from it. And the little story was about a kid who didn't like school, who didn't like to do much of anything. You know who it was. It was me. And a friend took it to an editor at Random House, who luckily was not a children's book editor. Otherwise, I think it never would have been published. And they wanted it. They want me to do it. So they called me in, and they gave me a contract. And I ran into Jules quite accidentally. His version of it is that we were both throwing out garbage one day, and we met. And my version was that I was throwing out garbage, and he was looking for something to eat. The first thing was the map. I said to myself, I'm going to write a book. It's going to have map end papers because I love maps and I have great collections of maps. And Jules wouldn't draw the map. I don't think he felt he could draw a map. Finally, I said, the hell with it. I drew the map. And Jules put a piece of tracing paper over it and redid it in his line, which is a little different than mine. And that was the end of that. Now, of course, people are always congratulating him on his wonderfully insightful map. And I have to sit there with my mouth shut. So, I wish it's the story of my life. Luckily, so many of them have been good.
Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
Don't let the door hit you, 2021.
Didn't we say this last year about 2020?
Right? Now, I will say this is a little better. Yes. It was marginally better. There's a lot of things we can look at this year that are better than where we were at this point that last year. But honestly, I expected more. I'm going to be frank. I expected more.
We're disappointed in you, 2021. We're feeling 22, like Taylor Swift says.
Well, welcome. If you are new, if you have just stumbled upon our little podcast here, this is Book Versus Movie, a podcast where we read the books and then we watch the movies that they are developed into, and then we discuss and try to decide which we like better. We're neither film experts or literature majors, but we've been at this for a good long time, so we know a little bit of what we're talking about. And if you are wanting to suggest books and movies that we can do in 2022, or you want to meet us or other listeners of this podcast, there are several places where you can do that on the internet.
Yes, you could find us with our basic Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and look up Book VS Movie. We have a private Facebook group where we're much more interactive, and you just type in Book VS Movie Podcast Group and you have to ask to join. People give suggestions all the time. We've had a bunch of new people join recently, so welcome to all of you. If you like Twitter or Instagram, we're at Book Versus a Movie. Just spell that out. We also have an email, Book Versus Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. We also do have stickers and magnets if you would like some merch for the new year, or just, once again, sending us suggestions for your books. And we also have done plays, we have done songs, we've done magazine articles, we've done novellas. I mean, seriously, we're looking for material.
Yeah, the fortune cookie, there's a movie, we're on it.
Bazooka Joe comic.
So today's book and movie was a listener suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a great, I don't know why we've never thought of doing this one before. It is one of my favorite books of all time.
And this is where I had no idea about this book or movie. I don't know why. I realize now it's a classic and everyone loves it. Yeah, I know. Yeah. My parents were big readers.
We're going to be talking about The Phantom Tollbooth. I was going to show and tell it today, but it's in the other room. But I still have my original copy that I received when I was, I received in the 70s. I don't remember which birthday it was. My parents had a friend worked for Harcourt Brace Jovanovich, which had an office in San Diego in those days. And so I had an amazing library of children's books. And she always would give me books that were really challenging for my age. And I always really loved, I have so many of them still, including my copy. And it's like a second or third edition of, it's not a first, sadly, but it's an early edition of The Phantom Tollbooth. I mean, this book just captured my imagination when I was a kid. I was obsessed with it. I read it again and again and again. And I actually didn't know about the movie until I was an adult. It was on TV and I was like, what is this weird cartoon? Oh, wait a minute. Like, I know who that is. And who's that? Whoa. I had no idea that they had made a movie of it. So that was a fun discovery for me. And I don't know why we've never done it before. In all these 7 years that we've been doing this podcast, we're finally doing The Phantom Tollbooth.
Yeah, please reach out to us with your ideas. You'd be surprised, like, what we haven't thought of and what we haven't done before. This book, it's prescient because this is a book that came out 60 years ago this year. And also, the author, Norton Juster, passed away this past March. He lived to be 91 years old. And
I know.
So interesting. I put a couple of clips on our Facebook group page. There was a big anniversary for the 50th anniversary 10 years ago. CBS Sunday Morning did a segment, and I put that in on our Facebook page. And, you know, Norton Juster and Jules Pfeiffer, who illustrated this book, still very good friends. They both became huge successes. But I saw all these people like showing up to get their book signed by them. And it's the last time I saw something like that was I worked a book signing for Maurice Sendak. That level.
Oh wow.
He was so nice.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were that's the level of like how popular this book was. And I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know. Once again, my parents were big readers and I was a big reader. Look, sometimes things just kind of pass us by. And that's sort of the fun of doing the show, too. It's just finding new things. And so this is the book we're talking about today, The Phantom Tollbooth. And it's by Norton Juster. And he was born in Brooklyn. He went to University of Pennsylvania. He served in the Navy. And in the Navy is where he started doodling and drawing just to combat the boredom of being in the Navy at that time. When he got out of the Navy, he decided he was really interested in civil engineering, city planning. And he was a kid, like I said, grew up in Brooklyn. Well, the baby boomers were all moving out to the suburbs. And he thought the kids wouldn't understand how cool city life was because they would just be growing up in the suburbs. So he wanted to write a book about city life and urban planning. And he took this grant.
Right. Not exactly this.
No.
Yeah. He got a grant to write a book about cities, but not quite in this way.
No. And this was in the late 50s. And it was like an $8,000 grant, which at that time, that could pay your rent for a year. That was enough to kind of keep you going. He lived in this house with Jules Pfeiffer in Brooklyn Heights. It's about as twee and wonderful, I think, as it gets as an artist to be. Can you imagine?
Seriously.
Right.
Upstairs, downstairs. The architect who's the children's author and the illustrator who lives downstairs sharing cups of sugar and whatnot.
Yeah. And then would show each other their work. And then Jules Pfeiffer said, I really like this story, but you need some animation with you need some illustration for it. And they started doing that together and they remained lifelong friends. Jules Pfeiffer has an interesting life. He's written so many interesting things. One of them is the screenplay for a movie called Carnal Knowledge, which I hate, but it's a very...
Me too.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. People love it, though. He was an illustrator. He also wrote a book called, I'm sorry, a play called Little Murders. And it's one of those movies that shows up on Criterion every once in a while. And it's about New York City and there's shootings everywhere. And basically, people are just living on the edge. And it has Elliot Gould. It was based on his play. Anyway, this is, he's also was an illustrator. He's in the Comic Book Hall of Fame. The both Pulitzer Prize winning. I mean, these are two very talented people. And he came up with this idea of taking words and numbers and how do you put them together in a clever way to get kids to get over their fear or loathing and or both of learning, you know, about math and about, you know, words and English and sentence construction and things like that. And so that's where this story comes from.
It's a wonderful book. And it's something that one of the things that I've always loved about this book is that you can read it when you're like, I think I gave it to my niece who's 9-ish, you know, you can read it then and get a lot out of it, but you can read it again as a teenager and get even more out of it. You can read it as an adult, as a parent, as a senior citizen, and there's always something more to learn. I just want to, if you will indulge me.
Yeah, please.
I want to read the opening of the book, which I think just sets the whole tone of their, and they have kind of a Juster and Pfeiffer have such a great kind of symbiotic, you know, worldview in the way that they build this world for us. So it opens with chapter one, which is called Milo, and says, there once was a boy named Milo who didn't know what to do with himself, not just sometimes, but always. When he was in school, he longed to be out. And when he was out, he longed to be in. On the way, he thought about coming home, and coming home, he thought about going. Wherever he was, he wished he were somewhere else. And when he got there, he wondered why he'd bothered. Nothing really interested him, least of all the things it should have. It seems to me that almost everything is a waste of time, he remarked one day as he walked dejectedly home from school. I mean, using words like dejectedly in a children's book, I mean, right away, you're like, what? I remember being a kid and being like, dejected, like, what does that mean?
And your parents sent you to the dictionary to look it up yourself.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
I can't see the point in learning to solve useless problems or subtracting turnips from turnips or knowing where Ethiopia is or how to spell February. And since no one bothered to explain otherwise, he regarded the process of seeing knowledge as the greatest waste of time of all. And worst of all, he continued sadly, there's nothing for me to do, nowhere I'd care to go, and hardly anything worth seeing. He punctuated this last thought with such a deep sigh that a house sparrow singing nearby stopped and rushed home to be with his family. I mean,
you could get this book, by the way.
The gloomy illustration, like, just, it's so good.
And all kids feel that at some point.
Like, sure.
Absolutely. And I was just saying that you can get this on the Libby app here in the States. They also have the audiobook you can rent. And that's Rainn Wilson.
It's very easy to get your hands on.
Yeah.
Really good.
I bought it because I was like, I want to have this again to listen to it. It's really an incredible listen. So Milo is our kid, and in his room, he's visited by a phantom toll booth. And the toll booth.
Yeah, there's a mysterious box in his room.
Right. And it's, you know, toll booth, if you don't know, that's when you're going through highways and you have to pay, you know, you have to stop and pay a toll, or you have to get the card, or you have a sticker on your car, you know. But anyway, but it's the price you have to pay to go through. And so he's getting this toll booth, and it's got a car, and it can take him on this adventure. And so he decides to go because he's so bored and there's nothing going on in the world.
Like, oh, well, I got nothing else to do.
And it reminds me.
We should mention also, I forgot to mention that Norton Juster also wrote The Dot and the Line.
Yes.
Which is, I love The Dot and the Line. I love the book. And then that's another really fun animated movie. But anyway, so Milo's like, yeah, what else am I going to do? Okay. And I like in the book, as always, when you go from book to movie, there's a lot of things that you have to condense or slightly change just for time's sake. But I really love in the book that he has to put the toll booth together himself. So he's like sliding tab A into slot C and gluing this and doing that. And he's like, I don't know, what else am I going to do? You know, like doing origami or something, just like, and that he has the car, he already has a car. He has a room full of toys, that don't interest him anymore.
Right.
He's played with all of them. And among them is this little car. And he's like, well, I got a toll booth. So I'll use the old car. Why not?
And he begins with expectations. There's a map in
the
here.
First stop.
Yeah. And it's all like the kingdom of wisdom. And there's all these like, so he starts with expectations, and that's where he meets the weatherman. And the weatherman is not about the weather, like rain or it's like whether or not you're going to do this or you're going to do that. And Milo learns, and then they also meets the doldrums, and the doldrums are these creatures that just suck the life out of you. Like they just help you lack.
He's not paying. And then again, there's a lot of allegory, you know, allegories. They spell them right out. He spells them right out for you, which is fun. It's like the gag of the book. So Milo is not thinking. He's not paying attention as he's going down the road, and he misses the turn to Dictionopolis, which is where he's trying to go. And he ends up, because he's not paying attention, he ends up in the doldrums, which is populated by these people called the Lethargarians.
I wonder if James Cameron is a fan. The Avatar thing.
Avatar.
Yeah.
Except Avatar has no sense of humor.
No, he missed that point. I mean, it's very, very clever, but he has daydreams. He gets lost, and then the doldrums hit him, and then he loses his energy, and the Lethargarians are coming after him, and that's when he meets Tok, the dog. He's his watchdog, and the dog has a clock and is always on TikTok. We got to go. He also he fights for him to get his energy and to be on time for things. When you say you're going to be on time, you're going to be someplace. That's Tok's idea. They go through wisdom, and then they go to Dictionopolis, and there's King Azaz, the unabridged, is one of the leaders, and he has a cabinet, and then there's a spelling bee that's the spelling bee where he finally learns how to spell things. There's the humbug that, and some of the illustrations are scary and creepy.
Some of them are very frightening. Oh my gosh, that guy is so
before Slender
like
Man
nightmares. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, way before.
Yeah.
Decades before. But yeah, there's a word market. It's a little kingdom of words with the marketplace. And there's a scuffle between the humbug and the spelling bee. And the marketplace gets just all overturned. Officer Shrift.
Officer Shrift,
who's very short.
Well, that's a crazy
expression. He comes
and
he arrests. I mean, it's so fun. But again, when you're a kid, you're hearing these things for the first time. I never heard that expression before. I read this book, Short Shrift. But that is who he is. You know, everybody's guilty. He arrests Milo and the humbug and Tok and sentences them to jail for 6 million years. And he takes them down to the dungeons of the kingdom. And that's where they meet the witch, not a W-I-T-C-H. But a W-H-I-C-H. Sidebar. This is totally unrelated to this book. But for Christmas, my mother had our home movies put on discs for us, which is really cool. Like, she took all of our Super 8 films and had them. Yeah, it was really neat. And there's this movie, which I remember this as a child. And I thought that I had imagined it. Because it didn't make any sense that this was the case. But no, I have photographic proof now that my parents took me to Disneyland in 1976, which was the bicentennial. Remember what a huge
yes.
deal the bicentennial was, right? And so as Disneyland often does for big events or holidays, they have a special parade that they do, right? So they had this special like Americana parade. I forget what it was called, like the Freedom Parade or something like that. And they had floats with different moments, great moments in American history. There's Betsy Ross sewing the flag and, you know, the signing of the Declaration of Independence. There is a float of Salem witch trials. Oh, and a woman being drowned. She's being dunked in water, and she's sopping wet, because that's fun for kids. I thought that I had imagined that all these years, that like there was float, there couldn't possibly have been a float of a witch being drowned, of a woman being drowned for being a witch at, in the Disney, there sure was. There definitely.
Wow. Was.
Yeah. But that's not the kind of witch we're talking about here.
This no, is a no.
Witch, like which witch hoodie shall I wear today? You know? Well, and I love her name. Everybody has the most wonderful names. Her name is Faintly Macabre. Which I did, again, had no idea what that meant when I was a kid or how to pronounce it.
Well, she's very kind, and she helps them along their way. King Azaz and his brother, the math magician, they have these arguments because words are more important than numbers. No, you wouldn't have numbers if you didn't, you know, you wouldn't have, if you didn't have numbers, you wouldn't have words and blah, 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 blah. And they go back and forth. And there's also these two young sisters, Rhyme and Reason, that help them along their way. There's a point where he's directing like the sun, right? The sunrise.
Yeah. So Faintly Macabre, the witch, she's our expositional character. So she explains the whole story of how this place came to be, how the kingdom was established. You have these two brothers, the numbers guy and the words guy, and you have these two princesses who settle all of the differences between the two kingdoms. But because the two brothers couldn't get along and the sisters refused to take sides, basically they banished the sisters, and there's this whole thing like nothing makes sense without rhyme or reason. And so Milo decides he's going to rescue them and bring them back. They've been banished to the castle in the air, and what I love is they're stuck in jail for 6 million years. They've been sentenced. And Faintly Macabre the witch is like, oh yeah, they don't care about keeping you here. They just care about sentencing you. There's the door's right there. You can go anytime. And they're like, oh, okay. And yeah, so then they visit both the kingdoms. They visit King Azaz, and he gives them like, there's a whole thing about the power of words, of course. And then they make their way to the numbers place, and the mathemagician gives them a whole thing about numbers. And yes, along the way, I mean, there's so many characters in this book. Many of them are not in the movie. There's Alex Bing, the little boy who's born up in the air and his feet grow down towards the ground.
Oh, right.
Right. There's Chroma that you were just talking about. Chroma is the person who is in charge of all of the color in the world. He's like a conductor, and his orchestra is the colors of the whole world, all the trees and everything in the sky. So at one point, Milo really makes a mess of conducting a sunrise. Who else is there? There's the cacophonous discord. There's a whole thing about sound. And,
right.
And anyway, it's looking at all of the aspects of human existence and offering them up for a child's, you know, examination and to meditate on, kind of, and really notice things about the world around you that you may have just taken for granted or maybe just never even noticed before, like the different, you know, like the beauty in sound and the beauty in silence, or sound versus noise. You know, it's mm-hmm. just really, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the book that you had to cut for time.
Yeah, there's also the 12-sided creature, the dodecahedron.
Oh, the dodecahedron.
Dodecahedron. Yeah, in Digitopolis. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. He's learning all these new concepts of words, and there's lots of puns, and I love puns. And he's having this great adventure. And just, you know, we spoil the details here. In the end, he comes home. And he leaves the box, he leaves the toll booth, he's in his room, and then all of a sudden the toll booth disappears. And he's kind of like, oh, I wish I could have that toll booth back. But then he realizes, no, the whole point of the toll booth is to help another kid. You know, you've already learned your lesson.
Right.
Now there's another
kid. He's like, now that I look around my room that was so boring before, or, you know, I didn't think there was anything going on. I'm like, wow, there's tons of stuff going on here, actually. And yeah. Wow, look at the sky. And look at all these toys I have, and look at these books, and wow. So he's it's only an hour has gone by in the, mm-hmm. in the book, in all that time, all these adventures, fighting demons and rescuing princesses. And, you know, there's always comparisons to the Wizard of Oz, but I think it's quite different from the Wizard of Oz. Actually, I think because the Wizard of Oz, I mean, it's sort of, I mean, the Wizard of Oz is she's appreciating her home at the end, like, and she just wants to go home. Milo doesn't want to go home.
No, Milo's just bored.
He's just bored and he's trying to help. He wants to help those people in the fantasy land. It's really about that. You know, he only goes home because he has to. He's not like, oh, I can't wait to go home. He's like, I got to leave you. Aren't you going to come with me? So it's, you know, it's a little bit different in that regard. And also, I mean, just all of these amazing educational concepts that are probably over the child's head at the first read, but really making children aware of these like very sophisticated concepts that maybe a lot of adults don't even know about.
Yeah.
Right. I remember when I read it the first time, I was that sort of a kid that I read it. You know, when you read a book, or you read a word that you've never heard out loud, and so your mind is trying to figure out what it's supposed to sound like.
And pronounced.
Yeah. And I remember like dejectedly, you know, I remember like constantly asking my parents when I was reading this book, what's this? What's that? What's this? What's this word? What does that mean? And I remember there were several things that they didn't know what, I mean, my mom didn't know what the Fibonacci sequence was.
Right.
You know? So yeah, it's, I mean, it's so much fun. It's a great read aloud to your kids or to yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, it's, I just, it's a treasure. And the illustrations,
I
just love them so much.
It's incredible talent that just, they were two friends. Just happened to live near each other, right in the same building together. And we're just chatting up one day, throwing out the trash, and said, I hear you upstairs walking all the time late at night. Like, what are you working on? And he's like, I've got this story, but I can't really figure my way around. He goes, well, let me read it and let me know. I'll let you want to know it, I think. And then
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, I'll add some illustrations. Maybe that'll help. Okay, can you do a map? Oh, I hate maps, but what if we do it together? Okay. And then one of them knew somebody that was an editor. And the book got in the hands of an adult editor, not a children's book editor. It was an adult editor. That was the big difference, because a children's book editor would have said, no kids can understand dejectedly. Oh, they're not going to. This is way too
adult.
Why
are you using these words?
And some Absolutely. Of these drawings are too scary, and the concepts are too scary. He really, but instead, he had this editor that helped him. And then it became this, you know, juggernaut. And it was an instant classic. It got huge reviews right away. Like, the New Yorker just gave it rave reviews, and it does very well. So of course it gets bought as a property for Hollywood. And this was MGM, and MGM wasn't doing that well in the 60s. It did okay, but it was not like a Paramount or something.
I mean, they had been the movie musical, you know, mid-century, like, they ruled the roost. And you know, post-war things kind of started to fray at the edges for them.
Right. And especially G-rated movies were kind of tough to, you know, Disney did them very well, but not everybody did them very well. It gets picked up, and it's, we're going to say like 66, 67. And that's when it gets a director, and the director is Chuck Jones, who, when I was a kid, my favorite cartoons were directed by Chuck Jones. I would watch the Bugs Bunnies and the, you know, all
of
that.
Them. The Grinch, you know, kill the wabbit.
I mean, just the monster, you know, the monster with the beauty parlor.
Oh, the monster. Oh. But like, the thing about a Chuck Jones cartoon that everybody always talks about, because again, his style, I mean, his early style is very, he was always accused of being very kind of Disney-esque. I'm trying to think of, what is the name of that little mouse? Sniffles the Mouse? What about a cute little mouse? No, very, like, super, 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 super cutesy. Anyway, but his style is so much more modern. Mm-hmm. You know, like when we were talking about, again, back when we were talking about Sleeping Beauty, one of the things that made that movie kind of a little bit bumpy was this, not quite deciding what style we're animating in. And they were sort of venturing into that kind of Chuck Jones territory, but they also were sort of back in the Snow White kind of world. Chuck Jones is a very modern animator in terms of the artwork and the people that he brings on board to do the backgrounds and all of that. But the thing everybody always talks about Chuck Jones that makes it a Chuck Jones joint is his timing. The timing of his cartoons is what makes it's what makes them so appealing to adults and children at the same time. You know, like the Roadrunner cartoons have no dialogue, right? But those like times where Wile E. Coyote's face is all like exploded and he just slowly looks at the camera, or, you know, the relationship of the characters and the it's so brilliant. And if you think about the Grinch, like the whole character of Max, the dog.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, of course he would be an ideal choice, I think. Because by then he was firmly established as the king of all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect fit.
So he helps to write the screenplay. And our author was not a big fan of this movie because he said he wasn't asked to participate. I mean, they just sold the rights and then they just took it over.
Which, yeah.
You know.
And we'll get to this in a minute, but the movie, I feel, and I had forgotten this because I've only seen the movie like maybe once, and I've read this book many, 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 many times. The movie totally cuts the most important thing of the whole book out of it. the most important message of the book. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But yeah, they should have asked him.
Yes.
Like, why do you not? Come on.
These things happen. Hollywood just takes over. MGM is having a rough time in the mid-60s. You know, their big musicals are not selling. They're not doing as well. The tastes are changing. The world is changing. It's kind of this psychedelic at times kind of, you know, take on it. But our star is Butch Patrick, Eddie Munster himself. And he was like 7 or 8 when he started it. And Mel Blanc is one of our character, you know, voice character actors. And June Foray, they're just huge in the cartoon world and for their voice work. Let's play the trailer first. Let me just play the trailer.
Yeah.
Follow Butch Patrick on a fantastic trip through the Phantom Toll Booth, where nothing is real but your imagination. To Dictionopolis, where words are weird.
Words in a word are fantastic. You can hint them, you can say them, you can print them, you can pray them, emphasize them, and despise them.
Digitopolis, where figures are freaky.
Numbers can be added to, subtracted from, divided into, multiplied by, crossed out, and erased.
Climb the mountains of ignorance, where dreams become nightmares.
We have nothing to worry about.
And the monsters are magnificent.
It's the gelatinous giant.
Pass through the Phantom Toll Booth and into the magic world of your mind. Rated G.
The movie comes out in 1970, and the studio had, this is after Bedknobs and Broomsticks and all these other films.
And The Summer of Love.
And yeah.
There's a big cultural shift that's just happened. Yeah.
Nixon's in the White House. Everything is just crazy. It is just like a
about no rhyme or reason.
No rhyme or reason. Everything is up is down. And they release this movie. They don't know how to market it. Nobody knew how to market this movie. And it basically opened playing only on weekends for a couple of months. It was this
so weird,
really bad rollout schedule. And so and Butch Patrick was a teenager by then and like a stoner or something. Like he couldn't do the press for it. And it was just kind of a hot mess. The movie comes out, it does, you know, doesn't do well. They kind of put it away. And then it's one of those things where teenagers discover it in the 70s and 80s.
It's trippy.
It is trippy.
And it's a slow burn. It is, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it starts in San Francisco. You got kind of a bored kid. He's like, yeah, this is boring. You know, Golden Gay Park, boo, who cares? And he comes home. I'm like, you live such a nice lifestyle.
He comes home to his magnificent Victorian townhouse. What is his house?
It's
like, get out of my way, kid. This is my, I want this place.
I want this life.
I love his house.
Yes. It's insane. And he's bored and he has all these toys and this toll booth shows up and he's able to take his car and ride through the toll booth. And then he's in the cartoon world. And this does happen. Like we talked about Bedknobs and Broomsticks. There's a time where they're in a cartoon. You know, we've had this happen many, many times. Mary Poppins.
That's not a new thing for audiences at this point.
Right.
No.
So as he's traveling along and he's meeting all these different characters, I love short shrift with Mel Blanc doing the voice.
Okay, let's just talk about this because, okay, you have Chuck Jones. There's a lot of good things about this movie, I have to say. There's a lot of things I really like. I think Chuck Jones is a great, I don't know who else you would get because he does have that same, just like Jester and Pfeiffer, he has that same adult child comedy at the same time kind of sensibility. The trippiness, I think, works for the most part. And then because of Chuck Jones, I mean, and he's had a very long career by this point. Chuck Jones was born in like 1914 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he has a long career. He knows everybody in the world of animation and voice acting and character acting. And so some of the most famous voice actors in history are in yeah. this movie. You have Mel Blanc is doing multiple characters. He's doing Short Shrift. He's fabulous. You have, you mentioned June Foray, who's the little granny in the Tweety Bird. Like, oh, Tweety yes. Bird. You know, I can't even do her voice because it's such a great
old lady. Well, she's also Rocky and Bullwinkle. Remember?
Oh, yes. I mean,
she lived to be 100 too.
Yeah. A lot of these people lived a very long time.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, and we've brought him up before, and I can't remember which movie it was, but one of my favorite character actors ever that has ever existed is Hans Conried, who plays both King Azaz and the Math Magician.
Oh, yes.
He is the main character in another very trippy kids movie, which is much earlier, by Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss's directorial debut, The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, which I highly, highly recommend. Freaking love that movie. And it's because of him. He's the one who carries the whole thing. Anyway, all of the great actors are in this. I mean, so the vocal performances are outstanding.
My name is Milo, and this is Tok, my watchdog. And we've been sentenced to 6 million years.
6 million? That's not a sentence, that's a number. It's against the law to mention numbers here in Dictionopolis. Words are the only things that matter.
I'm sorry, your kingship, sir.
After all, my boy, you couldn't have one fine day without the day, could you? You couldn't have tea for two without the tea, could you? You couldn't have three blind mice without the mice, could you? So you see, Milo, words are really very valuable things. If you think a great thought, how do you write it down? Words. If you spot a brush fire, how do you warn the town? Words. If you have opinions, how do you speak your piece? If you rent a castle, how do you read your lease? If you know a good joke, how do you tell a friend? Words, words, that's how.
I think the music, it's very, it definitely, like hearing it now, it definitely to me sounds like we're really trying to be the Sherman Brothers here.
Yeah, it's not right? Sherman Brothers level. It's adjacent.
No.
It's
yeah.
It's the kind you would get at the time. About like you're singing about little kids, like, hey, little kid, you get bored sometimes. Isn't that sad? Yeah. Why don't you go home, little kid, look at your books? Milo's song being the first one on there. Lee Pockris did the music, and he also wrote Teeny Weeny Bikini, Itsy Bitsy, Teeny yes. Weeny Yellow Polka Dot. That's his work. The songs are fine. I liked
they're fine, but they're not that memorable.
No.
They're a little long.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about where they're placed, but they run a bit long for me. And if there's one weak spot that I feel there is in this movie, it's the music, and it's a very slight weak spot. I mean, I'm picking it.
It's dated.
Nits here. It's dated. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
It's dated in a way that the rest of it is not, I feel.
Yeah. So that you don't really remember them. They're not as catchy. They're fine. you know, they move the action along. But it's all the same. Almost everything is the same with the toll booth, with the doldrums, with the, I like the whole sequence when he was directing the sun and the moon and he screwed that
up. That's gorgeous.
That looks amazing.
Beautifully done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that part you said you wanted to mention that he didn't?
Oh, so they go on this, they go first to Dictionopolis. They meet the King Azaz, who's played by Hans Conried, who's wonderful. And King Azaz sends them, again, this is the sort of Wizard of Oz, you know, touch of this whole story. King Azaz gives him the bag and is like, these are all the words in the world. Here you go, my boy. These will serve you well. And he sends him on his way. Then when he goes to Digitopolis, the math magician, who's also played by Hans Conried, gives him the little pencil. You're like, here's your magic wand and you use your numbers wisely and they'll never fail you and da-da-da-da-da. In the book, in each of those scenes in the book, King Azaz says, you know, here's the bag with all the words. And there's one more thing. It's the most important thing. It is the most important thing, but I can't tell you what it is until you get back. And so he's like, okay. And he goes on his way. And then they go to Digitopolis and they have the whole thing in there. And the math magician gives him the little pencil, you know, here's your scepter, you know, you can use this, however, da-da-da. And there's one more thing. It's the most important thing, but I can't tell you till you get back. And he's like, okay. And, you know, they go on their way and they're fighting the demons. That whole sequence I thought was just as scary as it is in the book. It's very frightening in the book and it's very frightening in the movie. Rescues the princesses, you know, hooray, hooray, hooray. Everybody's happy. The brothers are getting along again. And in the book, and this does not happen in the movie at all. In the movie, Miles like, okay, bye, see ya. Like, he doesn't feel bad about leaving his friends behind. He's just like, yep, getting in my car, driving home now.
Yeah.
Okay. In the book, first of all, he's like, he doesn't want to leave. And they're like, yeah, no, you need to leave now. And Talk's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to stay behind. And the humbug gets promoted. He gets some kind of a you know, affluent kind of a job. And so he's not going to go anywhere. And Milo says to the math magician and the King Azaz, he says, what was that thing? The most important thing. What was it that you couldn't tell me until now? And the most important thing that they couldn't tell him was that what he was doing was impossible. Because if he'd known it was impossible, he wouldn't have done it.
Right.
He wouldn't even have tried. That's
a huge lesson.
Message of the whole freaking book. And it's not in the movie at all. Not in the least. And I was like, really? Like, what? Where's the part? It never even comes up. It is literally the central message of the book. And it's not there at all.
Well, he has also a friend, Ralph, in the movie that he doesn't have.
Which is a cute device. I thought that was kind of cute that he's on the phone. And he's like, oh, hang on. And then it's just 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cute.
And then then Ralph could hear that it was coming through his window, which I thought that was kind of cute too. Yeah. I mean, I think it was really super enjoyable. I thought it was fun. I think there's some parts that are actually really scary. And I think if I were much younger, I would be kind of scared by it.
Oh, I could see myself being terrified if I'd seen that in the movie theater.
Yeah.
I definitely, because, you know, I mean, with scary things, I would have been under the seat.
Yeah. When they're talking about like all the things that can hold you back when you have the doldrums, all the crazy.
That scene is super scary. Like that scene didn't scare me as a kid in the book. The demons really scared me. Dr. Discord. But the doldrums is scary in the movie too. They're scary.
Yeah. They almost get him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't know it was impossible. So that's why he did it. And that's
another thing that I thought was really funny in the book. Talk has a huge clock in his belly. So every time you see Talk, he's got this, he's a watchdog, right? So you see this in the movie. I guess it's really hard to draw a clock, you know, in continuity over and over and over and over again. So in the movie, they do this thing where his clock is hidden under his fur and you see it only little glimpses every now, which I thought was very cute. I thought that was a nice way around that. I can understand that would be very difficult and costly to do.
Yeah.
And overall, I think it's good.
It's fine. I mean, I totally, yeah. I'm so, I mean, I wasn't mad at it. I wonder,
nope.
I mean, there's been quite a few people have done audiobooks versions of this. Like I said, Rainn Wilson was the one that I listened to, but I've heard other people had really great people on their audiobooks. I thought it's now considered a classic. You can stream it anywhere.
Oh, it's so easy to
find. It's so easy to find.
Yeah.
So book versus movie.
Oh, book.
I know, absolutely, right? It's not book. Even like...
But the movie, I think, is underrated, I would say.
Yeah. The music is,
it's not bad. It's just not like, can I remember any of the songs right now? I cannot.
No.
But they're not bad. You know, we've had movies like Stay Golden in
The Outsiders. I was thinking of Willy Wonka. Like part of Willy Wonka's charm is those great songs that just get stuck in your head that you can't.
Oh. Don't even get me started.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's lots of, and we've had other movies where, the songs are not great and they're so not great that they're getting in the way of the movie. I don't think this is going this far as all of that. I like the animation. A lot of people, I saw a lot of criticism about this movie, about it being sort of quote unquote television grade animation. I think that's very unfair.
No.
You know, he has a very modern style. And when you really look at, and not only that, there's a lot. It's a modern animation. Again, for 1970.
Yeah.
They're still hand drawing this stuff. Well,
1967, 68. That's when they really were working
absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely. 60s. Yeah. And still you have like lots of really innovative things, like the way they do the din, that he's just this like smudgy cloud that occasionally takes form. I think there's a lot of really sophisticated stuff going on with the art here. And I think it really holds up. I think, you know, it's unfair to what I'm seeing in this criticism is we're judging it either against 1940 Disney, which is hyper realistic, or Pixar. And it's neither of those things. And then you have, you know, again, the Chuck Jones, I think his directorial eye here, for the most part, is really very good. Because again, you've got the timing and the characters. The boy and the dog together are great throughout the whole thing. I really like it. And then can I please have Milo's house?
Yeah. House. Milo's got a good life.
Yeah. I don't know what his problem is, kid.
But weren't you like that too? I know there were some times like I drove my parents absolutely. Crazy because they're like, how many toys do you have? How many books have we bought you? You know,
it's a Mexican nice day mom? Outside. Try telling a Mexican mom you're bored. See where it gets you. You're going to be vacuuming so fast.
Tell an Irish mom you're too sick to go to school. She's like, oh my God. You're fine. You're fine. Rub some dirt in it.
I really, really enjoyed it. I have to say, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I really felt that I didn't realize that I do this after all these years. One thing that we've brought up a lot of times is you and I both often read the book, then watch the movie. Mm-hmm. I rarely watch the movie and then read the book. It's very rare. But I didn't realize until just this last go round that I also, before I watch the movie, I often read the criticism of the movie. I didn't realize that it's a thing I do.
Oh.
So I often just out of, I didn't realize that that was like part of my sort of process. I didn't really notice that I do that, but I do that. So I do usually before I watch the movie, I go like, okay, what were the contemporary people saying about the movie when it came out? And I really did feel that the criticism of this movie was unfair. And it's too bad that the rollout was so bizarre.
It was wonky. Yeah. They didn't believe in it. They just didn't. They just probably didn't have the money for it.
Yeah.
And it's too bad. Yeah. Because it deserves to be a kid's classic, I think.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's Chuck Jones. Didn't he also do Ricky Tikki Tavi? Is that him too?
I loved Ricky Tikki Tavi.
Me too. But it's like that, you know, it's on par with a lot of and Willy Wonka and a lot of those things. I think, yeah, it totally deserves to be. It's given short shrift. I think we can say
Captain Short Shrift.
That was so fun. Okay. What a great way to finish out this dreadful year.
Yes.
What are we going to do next?
We had a request from one of our Patreon members. By the way, if you're interested in supporting us, go to Patreon. We put all the 2019 and then previous to that, all those episodes are up there. I just put up Wizard of Oz. Anyway, it's Jackie, and she would like for us to redo Heart of Darkness. That was a long time ago.
That was a very long time ago.
Yeah, that's an old.
I seem to recall. Old. I really disliked that book, but you know what? I think that bears a
revisit,
re-examination. Absolutely,
it's only 100 pages. Idea. It's just 100.
No, it's a short book. It's a very easy read. It's just not my favorite. But you know what? It's one of those books. I'm going to say because I know a lot of people listen to us and they also try to read the book before we do the episode. So if you're one of those people and you've never read Heart of Darkness, I do think it warrants a read. It's weird.
Absolutely.
It's a very weird book, but, and it's, again, it's not my favorite, but I do think it's totally worth reading. And I do think that you really can't possibly hope to get any kind of a grasp of Apocalypse Now without reading that book.
I would also recommend, if memory serves, it could have been a fever dream, but I remember that Kenneth Branagh did the audiobook for that, and I super enjoyed it. He could read anything to me, and I would be totally
happy.
That's
true. He's really good. He's good with that.
Excellent.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
So that might be a good way to do it. And Apocalypse Now, I've not seen in a very long time. And
me either. Probably not since the last time we did it. That was just ages ago.
Yeah. So I think that would be a really good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, let's do it.
It'll be trippy. We'll stay with the trippiness.
Yeah, we'll have like we're gonna go swirling into 2022.
Thank you all very much for listening to the show. If you want to support us, once again, we do have a Patreon page. You can also just leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'll give you a shout out if you leave us 5 stars in iTunes. All those places I mentioned before, please feel free to send us suggestions. Please join the Facebook group if you think you're even slightly interested. We always put up extra material up there. There's other people there. We just talk about books and movies there. It's really nice. It's a nice safe space
to really
hang out on Facebook.
That.
That's all it is. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick for Twitter and Instagram. And I'm just starting to do TikTok, Margo, and I'm adding some.
I saw that.
Book versus
I
movie.
Have not been brave enough. I have my account. I'm just a looky-loo.
So you can find me at Margo
but
Donahue.
I've enjoyed
there.
It.
Yeah. But I've been doing that a little bit there. Okay, so we'll be back next week with Heart of Darkness. Everybody, stay safe. Happy New Year.
And yes, Happy New Year.
We'll see you in 2022. Thank you so much for listening to the Book versus Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags Lady Pod Squad and Potter and Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to PATREON, and look for Book versus Movie Podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. You can follow Margo D at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media and Margo P at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode. When